Welcome back to Rude Dude.
Welcome back to the Rude Dude Podcast. I am your host, Henny Lopes the Lobster, with my buddy, my pal, my guy, Cameron the Cree Davis. How are you, the Cree?
Well, you know what, man? Like we were saying in the pre-show, rough day at work, but you know what, man? Today is a day of gratitude. I put it in the show notes. Today holds a very big significance in my life. This day, February 15th, six years ago, was when I finally hit rock bottom and decided to get sober and actually get sober. Now, I did have a relapse once in between there before I had my date that I have now, but I actually took it serious. I woke up on my kitchen floor 6 years ago on this day. Ashley was gone, and hey. I decided that I was going to change my life. So February 15th, big day. We don't celebrate Valentine's Day around here. We celebrate today. So I do have some gratitude, man, because 6 years ago was not a pretty picture. How are you doing, bro?
Dude, how about that power of the pod when 2 weeks ago was the original date I was dropped off at Jacob's Ladder's 6 year anniversary on the day.
Dude, I actually told Ash, I was like, how fucking rad is it that we get to record on this day? Like I was like, that's so sick. And it's another one of those God moments, right? Like, it's like, it fired me up. It fired me up.
Well, I'm doing well. Work was fine. Kristen and I decided what we're going to do for our wedding, and we can talk about it later, but we're gonna elope and have a nice vacation, do it by ourselves, spend money on that instead of a one day.
Yeah, you know what, man, I fully support that move, man. As someone who is anti spend $1 trillion on napkins and fucking forks for everybody else to sit there and not give a shit about, go enjoy the time for you guys, bro, because it doesn't matter, bro. So I'm stoked for you.
I'm very excited about it. And I'm also very excited because this week we have a guest that we've been interested in having on for a long time. She is a very good friend of mine. She's one of the people that I've known pretty much the longest of all the people that I've been here. We met when I was still in treatment, coming to meetings in Morgantown. And I don't think it's any kind of exaggeration to say that she's kind of a fixture in the Morgantown NA community. She sponsors women. She works with addicts. She helps unhouse people. She works for the Coalition of Stuff and Things. She'll tell us in a minute. I forget. Coalition to End Homelessness.
There we go.
She does all kinds of stuff for the community. And she also always shares honestly and openly, and I just think she her impact on this community can't be understated. So we are very lucky to have Miss Cassidy. I don't know if she wants to say her last name, so we'll say Cassidy. Hi.
You can say my
last welcome
name. I don't care. I've already been doxxed online publicly. It's
fine. Okay.
Haters out there,
that's what they do.
Well, how you doing today, Cass?
I'm okay. It was a pretty overwhelming day for work stuff, but other than that, just another day when you have two kids.
I feel that. I got a 9-month-old and a 4-year-old, so I'm fighting for my life 24/7 around here.
Yes, I have a 12-year-old and a 3-year-old.
Ooh,
it's pretty rough.
That's a wild gap.
It is. I was only going to just have the one. Then shit happens.
Yeah, shit happens. Hey, it's a blessing. No, I promise you that. That at least that's my view.
No, I definitely agree. I couldn't imagine life without her now. But they're both like developmentally in the same place where they just throw fits all the time because they can't regulate their emotions, and I'm just like, oh my god.
Oh, dude,
young bri guy.
Yes.
Well, welcome. We're really excited to finally get you on. Tell us a little bit about yourself, just like what you do for work right now and your clean date.
Okay. My clean date is April 6, 2015. I am currently a case manager at the West Virginia Coalition to End Homelessness. I work with people who are on the street going into housing. And a lot of them are people who use drugs or people with really complex mental health issues. And we use a housing first principle to do that, meaning that like the housing comes first. You don't have to be in recovery to deserve housing. You don't have to be on your meds to deserve housing. Like, we're going to house you and then we're going to work on the other issues that might impact your ability to sustain housing.
I've heard that. That seems to make a lot of sense.
You know what? That's a pretty cool job, and that's actually vitally important. That's something that my state out here fails at doing pretty bad. I know they have a bunch of ballots to try to fix that, but it doesn't seem to be at the forefront of our homeless issues. So I'm glad that at least somewhere, you know, people are taking that serious. That's important stuff that you do. Do you enjoy doing it?
I love my job. I love the people that I serve. I've been doing this work or similar work for probably the past 7 years. It has gotten a lot worse. We're in the middle of a housing crisis. The political climate is not great for unhoused people. And that's the part that's really disheartening. And I cry a lot about it. I'm just tired of fighting for people's basic human rights to be met, because it just seems like common sense to me. But, you know, we have like ignorant community Facebook groups here in Morgantown that just like take pictures of people that are unsheltered in precarious positions and just like roast the shit out of them. And it just drives me crazy. That's actually where I was doxxed on this community Facebook page, because I told them that they shouldn't do that. So
did they put your address on there?
Bro, they put the address, they put my phone number. And here's the thing. All pussies. All fucking pussies. This dude called me and he's like breathing heavily, and in my mind I'm like, god damn, this is a big motherfucker, you know what I mean? Because he's just like struggling to press some buttons on the phone.
Eat another pizza, pal.
Right. And like he called me and he's like, I'm gonna fucking kill you, bitch. And I'm like, if you were gonna kill me, you would just come do it. You wouldn't call me on the phone. And what I said to him was, sir, I'm in debt, it's fine. Just come on down. Because I already knew that my address and phone number had been posted. I was like, come on down, buddy.
Just do me a favor.
Right.
Over all of this, over, you know, just clapping back on something as simple as that?
That, and I was the director of our community's harm reduction program at the time, and they hated me for that too.
Yeah, I meant to tell you, I took a stand randomly for needle exchanges on here, and then I was like, I don't know that much about it, but like my friends are passionate about it, and I just think it's better. I just think the simple, my argument was like, listen, people are going to do drugs no matter what. They might as well have clean needles. It's pretty much that simple. Like, what's the argument more than that?
Yeah, and it's also like, it's harm reduction program with syringe services are really great because they're most engaged with people who are using drugs. And, you know, they come in because they need clean supplies, but you're also building rapport with them as the person working there. And if you're doing your job correctly, then you are opening avenues for various treatment resources and having these conversations about changing your life that they don't otherwise get anywhere else.
You know what? I actually didn't even think about that. It's like a natural causation of having that interaction, right? So yeah, ideally I can see how the populace would be, hey, well, why are we giving out needles? Why am I paying for this? Why am I blah 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 blah? But passively, like you just explained, it's a way to open the door, right? It's a way to have that conversation. And who knows, it may, you know, flip the switch for some of those people. Have you seen that happen?
Yeah. We referred a lot of people to treatment when I was directing the harm reduction program in Morgantown. And we also, you know, just loved people. And I think that that's really impactful. I think that regardless of whether or not people are using drugs and regardless of whether or not they have a house, like, they deserve love above everything else. And a lot of people don't hear that. We tell people all the time when they leave, like, I love you, be safe. And it's just something really simple that comes natural to me. I tell everyone I love them because a lot of my friends have died. So I just, you know, tell people I love them. But what's like so natural and reflex almost to me is something that is just like beyond comprehension to someone who never hears I love you.
Yeah. My fiance was, she told me that when she first heard me saying I love you to all my friends and stuff, she's like, oh, that's kind of like, she wasn't against it, but she was like, oh, that's interesting. You don't hear people talk like that much. And I said the same thing, you know, like we lose people and, you know, we have this chosen family and I care about all these people and we, you know, we want everybody to know because it could be the difference sometimes, you know?
Yeah. I also was on the street in Morgantown before I went into treatment and I was using pretty chaotically and I love you is just not something that I heard. So I just tell people I love them.
I think that's awesome. I've actually shared on here, and if you've listened to this podcast, Hen and I sign off by saying we love each other on this pod. Like it's a staple.
Just to let people know it's okay and it's important. Okay
for us to tell our friends that we love them because life's short, right? But I actually saw, this is kind of funny, I saw a little chart. I don't know the validity of it, but it showed that West Virginia is the state that says I love you more than any state in the union. According to this thing. So you guys are a bunch of love bugs out there, whether you're getting it when you're on the streets or not. You guys say I love you more than any state in the United States. I thought it was pretty cool. I forgot to share that with you.
I have one more question and then we'll get into your story a little bit, but how do you deal with like the emotional fatigue from doing work like that? Is that a major factor?
Yeah. Especially right now, I do feel like my shelf life for direct service is rapidly expiring. And not because of my clients. I'm just exposed to a lot of secondhand trauma. And it just really fucking sucks. I just come home and complain about it a lot and I cry about it. I don't really have a good way to deal with it. Because the way my brain is set up is like, I want to fix the problem and it's all shit that's beyond my control.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think about it. I just being in recovery, we deal with that stuff, but it's obviously it's not as frequent, but just like the stuff that I deal with friends in recovery, it can be a lot. So I'm like, man, I can't imagine this doing this for work every day. It's gotta be so exhausting, particularly dealing still with people in either active addiction or, you know, barely in recovery all the time. Like you're doing the Lord's work. God bless you.
It's super tough too, because there's just that chaos in those new recovering people, right? Like there's still that trauma. And like you said, you're kind of getting like the secondhand smoke of it, right? Like you're getting it whether you want it or not. And it's only human. And especially from people like us in recovery, I think once we get sober, we become these natural empaths, right? Like, because we know. And then when we hear other people bringing these things up, like we feel for it and we're like, shit, like you just said, Cassie, you're like, shit, I want to fix this for this person. Right. And we can do kind of the bad thing in my opinion and start taking those things on my imaginary backpack and bringing it home and crying about it. Right. So I hope you find a better way of processing that. Cause I don't want you to be doing that. That's not a good way to do things in my opinion.
Yeah. I'm actually currently pursuing a non-direct service role still within the same sector. But I just think that I want to do something that still helps people, but not dealing directly with people anymore. It's been a long road.
I feel that. All right. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about your history and how you got to recovery finally?
Okay. I grew up with a very chaotic mom. My mom was really young when she had me. My dad wasn't in the picture. I started using when I was my kid's age, my oldest kid's age. And I didn't really start off like light. I just went straight for it. My mom was in and out of prison a lot when I was a kid growing up. And I was really angry about that. I took that really personally, and I couldn't really see that my mom's decisions weren't, that she wasn't capable of like considering me when she was making these decisions to wind up in prison. My mom is like very mentally unwell, and she's just, you know, she's just not batting a thousand. But I didn't know that when I was a kid. You know, I just thought that I was like a shitty kid or something, and that I wasn't good enough. So I started using, and like a very stereotypical girl with absent father fashion, just like started seeking relationships. I grew up in Hagerstown, Maryland. I had to move to Morgantown. One of the times my mom went to prison to live with my aunt and uncle, I was a really bad kid. I really didn't like to listen to people, and I really just liked to get high. And by the time I graduated high school, which I did graduate barely, but I did, and no one ever asked you for your transcript. They just want to know if you graduated. So thank God.
Yeah.
But when I graduated from high school, I was really off the chain. I didn't have anywhere to live. I bounced around from place to place. I met my oldest child's father, and he let me move in with him. So I was in love with him for that. That was great. And I had this baby, and I thought that like having a baby was going to fix me, and that it was going to make everything better, and that I was going to be like this really great mom. And then I like stopped using when I was pregnant with her. And then after I had her, I realized that everything actually was more stressful, and that I just wanted to get high again. So I did. And Maya, my oldest, she is ride or die. She has been through the struggle. We've been in the trenches. We have, she fucking, you know, she, when Maya sings bees in the trap, she means it. You know what I mean? Like she fucking means it with her whole chest, because we were there. And when she was 3 years old, ironically enough, my mom took her from me and provided her with a more stable life than I had. I was unsheltered at that time. Things were pretty bad. I didn't really have the capacity to hold a job. So I was participating in sex work to feed my addiction, and robbing people and just doing like a bunch of really dumb shit that could get me arrested. And finally, one day, I actually didn't even want to go to treatment. I called my mom. If you've ever seen the movie Basketball Diaries with Leonardo DiCaprio, the scene where he's like crying outside of his mom's door, like, why are you doing this to me? Because he just wants to like pawn her TV one more time and she won't let him in. That was pretty much what was going down. I was trying to shake my mom down for $20, and she's saying no, and I'm like crying because I'm like fucking sick. Like, sick as shit. I had broken my ankle. So I was in a cast, so I couldn't even like effectively steal anything and run away. I was just really out of tricks.
Down bad.
There were no tricks to be turned, literally and figuratively. And yeah. I had actually one of the most embarrassing fucking moments of my fucking life. I had propositioned this drug dealer to have sex with me. Mind you, I'm so strung out at this point. I don't remember when the last time I took a shower was. I don't even really understand hygiene. I'm living like a fucking feral cat. And he just looked at me and he was like, no, baby girl, you smell bad. And he gave me pity dope. And that was hands down the most fucking embarrassing moment of my life. He gave me, I'm sorry, you stink dope.
Oh.
I was so embarrassed. And it is important to note that this man didn't smell that great either. He always came from inside the house, but he definitely roasted me. He wasn't wrong.
He wasn't even like, he didn't even have high standards, but you still didn't make the cut.
The bar was in hell and I did not clear it. And
so, and that was not your rock bottom.
No, hell no. My rock bottom was me crying to my mom for $20 and her saying no, because my mom was also like one of my biggest enablers. She was like my biggest source of trauma, and I used that against her and turned her into my biggest enabler. And when she finally said no to me, I was like, oh fuck, I'm fucking hit. I don't even have the backup plan. I used to fucking wait for her to leave her house and like raid her house like I was the goddamn police just to find her money. She did not sell drugs.
So your mom did have a period of sobriety that when she was like doing okay and taking care of Maya?
Yeah, and I would honestly, I don't even know if I would lump her into the same category as us. I think that her main source of contention is her mental health struggles. And then sometimes that like manifests like a little using spell, but that's, she's not my patient and I can't diagnose her, but that's just what I think. And, but she did really well when she was taking care of Maya for a really long time. But she told me she would take me to the hospital that day. And so I went, and I had like some really unrealistic expectations about what that was going to look like. Cause I thought I was going to go in there and be like, it's a lot of morphine. Get them out, boys. Let's go. And that did not fucking happen. But I, they asked me if I wanted to go to treatment, and at first it was detox. And I was like, okay. Cause I thought my mom would let me live with her if I completed detox, and I was really tired of not having a place to live. So, I went to detox. She said that that wasn't going to be long enough. So I went to 28 day, cause I had been bamboozled. But, when I was there, I really started to like buy into not using anymore. They made us go to meetings. I wasn't like jazzed up about it. I was not the girl in rehab putting on a 3-hour face of makeup to go to the outside meeting. That's not my story. That didn't come until after I finished rehab. But I went to a 6-month treatment program after that. And then I came, home. And yeah, that is, I mean, a lot of shit has happened between now and then. It's almost been 9 years since I used. I didn't get my kid back for the first 4.5 years that I was clean.
And then when you did, you were ill prepared.
Oh my God. So ill prepared. I went from like this state of like rapid fire relationships because I didn't feel good about myself and like trying.
Dicks are like crap.
I did say that at a speaker meeting one time that dicks were like crack to me and microphone podium. And you know what? That is just where I was.
That was your truth at that time.
That was my truth. And I made one of my favorite friends because I said that. And she came up to me after the meeting and she was like, I'm so glad that you said that. But also every man at every sober living house at that event tried to add me on Facebook after that. They're like, what's up, girl?
Yep.
And I didn't have standards at that point. I was like the opposite of Shania Twain. Everything did impress me very much. So like you could look at a it's fine. You don't have a job. It's fine. I have a job. I have enough job for the both of us.
You're a felon with no car and no job. That do impress me a lot.
Yeah. You live at home with your mama. Oh yes. Oh yes.
Yeah.
I wanted all the scrubs.
So it took you a while to get Maya back. What was that process like? I think that's important to talk about because a lot of people have this issue where they've lost their kids in addiction, but there's also just anything like everybody wants it now. Like as soon as I get clean, I want a car, I want a job, I want a house, I want a boyfriend, I want a girlfriend, I want a pet and all that. And like, That took some time. What was that like?
That was fucking divine intervention because I was not ready. My mom really fought me tooth and nail on it. It was just a rough go. I was going to get her back when I had around 3 years clean. And I had moved to Clarksburg and I started working as a peer recovery support specialist at the Harrison County Day Report Center. That did not work out well because I don't like the legal system or the police, but I don't know why I thought I was going to thrive there, but I fucking hated it. When I was living in Clarksburg with 3 years clean, I was sexually assaulted and I went off the fucking rail. I didn't use, I wanted to use every single day. But mentally I wouldn't leave my house. I was very afraid. I was living in this 2-bedroom apartment in Clarksburg by myself. And it was like a really scary time. So then I didn't get Maya back at that time because my mental health was fucking horrible. I couldn't even take care of myself. So that was like another punch to the gut on top of some really fucking heinous shit. But I just would like fucking call people and tell people how I was feeling. One of my really good friends, Brittany O and Beckley, I would drive down from Clarksburg to Beckley like every weekend of my life and just cry at her house. And like that should save my life. I was pretty resigned to the fact that I was never getting Maya back after that because I felt like I had my chance and then I fucked it up. But lo and behold, I moved back to Morgantown and I was living with a roommate. I had quit my job at Day Report because it's fuck 12 all day. I fucking hated it. And I was just waiting tables. I was like fucking broke. Didn't know what I was doing with my fucking life. And my mom brought me my kid and she never came to pick her back up. And I didn't know that that was going to happen. I thought she was just spending the night. So I had her and it wasn't like this fucking happy, fun moment. Like I thought it was going to be. She was basically just like, why are you telling me what to do? You haven't been my mom for years now.
How old was she at that point?
She was, 7.
So this brings me to something that I love about you. And I think so is so important. And I kind of heard it first from you. You practice it and you preach it. But just sharing honestly and being honest, you know, like everybody wants to have this storybook. I got my daughter back and it was flowers and rainbows and everything was perfect. But sharing the way you do and being like, it was fucking hard. I was ill prepared and it was rough. That's what helps people because that's what people relate to.
Well, I think it's like, I don't like a trophy sharing ass motherfucker. I don't like it. It's not realistic. Like, yeah, good things happen sometimes, but like trying to make this seem easy and try and make it seem effortless and flawless because you want clout is really fucking irresponsible. Getting my kid back was the hardest was one of the hardest fucking things that I've gone through since I got clean because I didn't know how to be her mom. She didn't know how to be my kid. There was no mutual respect. She didn't respect me at all. And there's no reason that she should have, you know? She's just a little kid who wanted her mom to be there for her, and I wasn't. And we had to learn how to live with each other all over again. And she had to learn how to trust me because when she lived with me before, from what she recalled, it was fucking chaotic. And also, I wanted to fucking punch her in the chest every single fucking day. I was used to doing whatever the fuck I wanted, whenever the fuck I wanted to do it. And I mean, like, yeah, my requests of whatever I wanted to do had become more reasonable because I was in recovery, but there was no way I could fucking like, you know, I had to like get this kid ready for bed and go to school. I just could not live the same level of like carefree that I was living before that.
Yeah. You know, I kind of wanted to circle back to what Hen said, how like, you know, when you first get sober, how it's, I want the house. I want this. I want my kids back. I want all that. And it reminded me of that. You guys have probably seen it. It's that stereotypical recovery movie. You've seen 28 Days with Sandra Bullock?
Yes.
Yeah. And you know how the end, how they tell him to get a plant and make that survive first. And then she goes and she sees that guy and he's got a fucking dog and the plant's dead. And it's kind of like that. It's kind of like that same principle, right? When I worked in recovery up in El Dorado Hills, I saw a lot of moms who had, a bunch of CPS cases, and you could see just the pain in like their eyes and in their hearts once they got sober. But then once they got clean and some of them got their kids back, you could see that struggle that you're explaining, Cassidy, right? Like they didn't know how to be a mom. They didn't know how to be a mom. Like, hey, here, you did a good enough job. Here's your kid back. And it's like, okay, well, what the fuck do I do now? Like, I'm still learning how to be myself, for Christ's sake. You know what I mean? Now, was the government involved in your situation, or was it just your mom was the sole provider?
Just my mom was the sole provider, and a lot of threats were levied. So she had a lot to hold over my head. So it was a rough time. But I think Maya came back at the exact right time. I was in a place where I didn't feel like I needed to have 5 million sober living house boyfriends anymore. And I was comfortable with myself, and I felt confident in my ability to, stay in recovery. And I knew that, like, I could make shit happen. Like, I had faith in myself to like make a life, where I didn't have that for the first 4.5 years that I was here. I just was just floundering around waiting for the other shoe to drop, not really trusting myself. Anyone that knew me at that time is entitled to financial compensation. Anyone that knew me for the first 4.5 years is entitled to financial compensation.
Yeah, you were definitely a little more wild and reckless, and now you're still wild, but like in a more controlled chaos way.
Yeah, like I'm just making like shady comments on people's Facebook posts now. I'm not like out and about running the streets.
So I don't mean to bring up this again, but I heard that you said that you were sexually assaulted.
Yeah.
Okay. How did you go about processing that? Aside from, I know you kind of explained it by like going down and crying with your friends and talking that way, but did you do anything extra? Did you see any therapists about that or anything? Cause that's a very hard issue. And I'm sorry that happened to you, by the way. That's terrible.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I have been in therapy for the better part of the last 9 years. I was seeing a trauma therapist at that time that specializes in EMDR. And I was already established in having appointments with her when that happened. So I just continued seeing her. She is literally the fucking goat. I love this woman so much. There's only so far that I could go personally with just like 12-step recovery. I had to go to therapy. I have a lot of complex trauma from my childhood, and a lot of like really shitty negative self-cognitions that I believed about myself that I just had to seek some extra layer of outside help. And I'm super chill and mentally ill, so I am very very intertwined in healthcare.
EMDR, I've heard of that. That's that like targeted like light trauma thing. Is that what it is? Kind of where you like focus on one certain point?
It can either be rapid eye movements or vibrational patterns, and we did it with vibrational patterns.
Did it work?
Yeah. I think that therapy really helped me. I try to get a lot of my clients connected with trauma therapy for their trauma.
Awesome.
Yeah,
that's another thing that I've always heard you talk about, and I love, is you've always been a big supporter of like, do whatever it is that you need to do outside of 12 step to get yourself where you want to be. Like, we don't have to make this the end all be all and say that these other things are outside issues. Like, if you want to go to therapy, if whatever you have to do, like make sure you get your meds if you need meds, and whatever you have to do. That's another thing I always hear you talk about, and I also think it's very important.
I will fucking die on this hill. I will fight anyone off this hill.
She's ready to perish.
People that fucking down people in the 12-step community who are on medically assisted treatment can eat my whole fucking ass, dude. Like,
Hey, straight up.
It just fucking grinds my gears. I take all kinds of medications for my mental health, and I have throughout the whole time that I've been clean. And I just really don't see the difference. Like, these medications obviously alter my mind and mood because that is why they are prescribed to me. So I just feel like,
because if not, I'd be cutting motherfuckers all day.
It's true. And you know, I understand that, like, some people were brought up in a different time in the 12-step community, and I respect that. But I know people that have, like, decades clean that don't treat people on MAT like shit. So I just feel like that's, like, a really fun excuse to, like, get down on someone for trying to change their life by any means necessary. And I just feel like in today's day and age, with, you know, the way that people are rapidly dying, we just don't really have the luxury of being able to judge how anyone chooses to recover. And I don't want to make anyone feel unwelcome. And I will always be that bitch that fucking tells someone off if they're, like, shitting on someone who's on MAT in a meeting. I will always be that guy.
You know what? That's a great point. There's been, like, that stigma even about, like, taking, you know, mental health medication, right? And I've talked about it on here. I've been on antidepressants, anti-anxiety medication for, like, I think 17, 18 years, right? Like, I was on them, like, before I even, you know, hit rock bottom or anything. But it keeps me from not wanting to kill myself for the most part. So if anybody's got a problem with it, you can eat my ass as well. I also think that, you know, the MAT conversation is really important, because I know a few people who are still on it to this day, haven't touched their drug of choice, heroin, in 9-10 years. And what's the fucking problem with that? What's the problem with that? And that's a great point with how fast people are dying today with the fentanyl and everything like that. Wouldn't you want somebody to just take their medication, not be on heroin and risking their lives on the streets, and support them in that fashion? And I think that's a damn shame that still happens. So I will perish on that hill with you, Cassidy. That is complete horseshit. Hen, do you want to perish on this hill?
I will stand alongside you guys and perish. My main thing is, like, you can't say the newcomer is the most important person and we welcome everyone and everyone can be in this club. And then all of a sudden, like, it's like Christians who hate people because they're gay or because they're black. Like, you're not Christian. That's not what Christ taught. And it's the same kind of stuff for me with, like, NA, of saying the way this person does it, or, like, anything that can alienate someone and make them go get high and die is not cool. I guess that's my basic opinion.
Yeah. And so, like, one of my best friends in the world, I've known him, and specifically his wife, since I got clean. I went to treatment in Fairmont. They had, like, a lot of time, and they still were my friend, even though I was, like, ratchet as fuck. And they had this, like, whole ass cool life, and they're like, you know what, we're gonna just, like, adopt this fucking flaming dumpster. But I because admittedly I haven't always been the most non-judgmental person in the world. I thought I was, like, the 12-step meeting police, you know. I wanted to, like, judge people and, like, judge what I thought their program should look like. Like, you know, I think that I was 23 when I got clean, and people in their early 20s suck. They just do. They just do. And but I, like, watched my friends Chris and Angela specifically just love people regardless, and just love me regardless, right? Because, like, I was causing chaos and they loved me no matter what. I've never seen either of them make someone feel uncomfortable in a meeting because of medications they were on. I have seen them both, like, be fucking, like, go out of their way to be kind to people that, like, show up to the meeting high. You know what I mean? That's how, like, they raised me to, like, change the way that I, like, thought about things and, like, expand my perception just through, like, doing the right thing and just watching them do it and wanting to be like that. So there are really good people in the 12-step community. Sometimes I just get really harped up over the few ones that are shitty, because they're always the loudest.
Do you remember when I said someone told me to call, I should call my sponsor, and I was like, did he call his bitch ass sponsor?
I do. I heard he has.
I think that was when you decided you might like me.
Yeah, I heard he has a podcast. It's not as good as this one, though.
Oh, hey, there we go.
LOL.
Yeah, so the other thing that I feel like you're really good at, this is something I admire in my sister as well, and something I kind of aspired to, is just like not caring what people think. And I feel like that's such a process. And with that, I guess one thing that I'm noticing about your story and that I think is so important for people to remember is that this shit takes time. It can be like frustrating because you didn't, all this stuff that I'm talking about and that you're mentioning, it didn't come to you, you know, in your first 2-3 years. Like it takes a while for us to really, like, you know, they say the longer you get, the more you realize you don't know shit about fuck. But I don't know what the question is in there. I just think it's cool. Like, you're really good at just doing you and being yourself, and people can deal with it.
Basically, I'll frame the question for you. How do you walk around not giving a fuck, Cassidy?
Perfect.
I don't give a fuck about what people think about me now. I did for a long time, but it just is like, I had no shame when I came in here, man. Like, I was like selling ass to get high, and like, which there is no shame in that. We support all kinds of work boots in this motherfucking house. But like, for me, it wasn't an empowering experience. It was very much like a means to an end. And I did not feel good about what I was doing. And not because like the work itself is shameful, but because like I was in a rough spot. But you know, I didn't have anything left to lose when I came in here. What do I care about telling a group full of people who have also like probably showed someone else their butthole for drugs before, my fucking, the shit that I did when I was getting high, or the shit that I'm thinking or feeling? Like, I don't give a fuck what you people think about me in the meeting. I mean, I give a little bit of a fuck about like what my employer thinks about me and shit like that, but I'm not going to fucking put on airs for people in fucking 12-step recovery meetings. You guys are all fucked up too. And you know, like Emma was saying earlier, like, I have gotten nothing overnight. I didn't drive a car again for the first 2.5 or the first 2 years and 10 months that I was clean. I came in here with fines on fines. The license was so suspended. And I didn't get a car. I didn't experience like a healthy, stable relationship for a long fucking time. Shout out to Derek, you know,
D-Rock.
He's really great. So I get Maya back, right? She's 7. She's about to turn 8. I meet Derek, the only boyfriend I have ever had in recovery that is just not such a fucking total piece of shit. Everyone's super hyped for me. Like, it's just like, we're all vibing. It's a good time. Boom. Get pregnant. I don't even know this man's middle name. We've been seeing each other for like 2 months. And I was like, well, I guess I'm going to find out if I like this motherfucker or not. And we've been together.
And it worked out okay.
We've been together for over 4 years now. So
congrats.
Thank you. It's been really great. We live in a nice part of town. We have a park in our backyard. One thing that's like seems really insignificant. I always wanted a trampoline in my yard when I was a kid, but I didn't really have like the most stable stuff going on. And we have a trampoline in our backyard. I don't know why it makes me emotional. I always wanted one when I was a kid, and now my kids get to have one in my backyard that's connected to a park. It's just very fucking wholesome over here, you know? My youngest has never seen the struggle, never been in the trenches. It's just things like that that I never really imagined possible for me. Like, these kids love me. Like, mom is like the go-to. And that's not saying anything about Derek. He's great. I don't know why these kids want to live up my ass, but they do. But breaking that cycle is probably one thing that I'm like the most proud of.
Fucking right. Hell yeah. And I think like with the trampoline thing, you said it's insignificant or whatever, but I think stuff like that is so important. You know, we talk about gratitude on here all the time, and you know how it can be the littlest thing. And a win is a win, man. And if like, if that's status to you, or if that's like, you know, because it was important to you and now you're providing it for your kids, like that's cool as fuck. I don't care what anybody says. Like little shit like that is the coolest.
It really is. I have a question for you since, you know, you had a lot going on. I mentioned it in our last episode, and it's about suffering and how I kind of turn it on its head now these days, and I'm grateful for it. Do you, I'm curious, do you find yourself being grateful for your suffering? And I mean, your struggles from getting sober, everything you went through to now where you're sitting today, being able to provide, say, that trampoline for your kids and, you know, having a job and no longer, you know, having to sell yourself and things like that. Are you grateful for that? Or do you still have any resentments? Because I think it's an important question.
I definitely don't have resentments. I wish that things were different. And not even just for me. Like I've had like a pretty up and down relationship with my mother my whole life. And just like, recently, a couple months ago, my grandmother like brought some old pictures down of me when I was a baby, pictures that I had never seen of like me and my mom, and just seeing this like young 18-year-old mom who like looked like she had all the love in the world for me, you know, it just like, I just wish that things would have been different for her so that they could have been different for all of us. You know, it just like understanding my mom and like understanding that she is like mentally unwell and that it's not because she didn't love me and it's not because I wasn't good enough. It's just that she wasn't given what she needed to thrive has been really painful. And I don't think that I'm grateful that that happened, but I'm grateful for that understanding. Because like it's given me a lot of peace in my own life. I'm grateful for how things have turned out now, and I don't believe that I would have the same life that I have today if I hadn't gone through those things. But I definitely do wish things could have been different for my mom, and that she could have been given the chance to like be the mom that I can tell that she wanted to be.
That's something that we talk about on here a lot, that we said in the last few episodes, I think, where like just granting people grace in general. And one of our other guests, Jeremy, said the most amazing thing. He said, "This is your parents' first time living this life too." And another line that I love that I heard from, can't remember her name. She's a big podcaster, but she said, maybe they were doing the best they could with what they had. And for me, I kind of had to do the same thing with my dad. His stuff was way different, but at some point I was like, oh, you know, he was the oldest kid with a single mom. He had to basically raise his little brothers. When they got in trouble, he got beat, you know, life was not easy for him, so on and so forth, whatever. And I'm like, he didn't know any better, and he did a lot better than what his parents did for him. And he, you know, like I had to find that, to grant him some grace and just realize like everybody has their own shit. And that was very freeing. Like, is that the same experience you had, and how did you come to realize like, oh, like I get it now?
It was the pictures, man. They're like these pictures that I had never seen before in my whole life. I don't know where they were hiding. But up until that point, I had never seen a photo of my mother and I together when I was a kid. So it really like fueled this narrative that like she just didn't give a fuck about me. And the pictures, I wish that I could show them to you. They just speak for themselves. And then just like finding out that my mom was mentally and physically abused by her father when she was a child, and that like that shit takes a toll on you. And just like really realizing that like our parents didn't grow up in the therapy is cool era. It was not happening back then, you know?
No.
And It's taken me 8 years to realize that. I've been mad at my mom for 8 fucking years, sharing about how I want to punch my mom in the face in meetings for 8 fucking years.
I seen it. And then you see your mom holding you as a baby when she's 18 years old, and then you think about how fucking stupid you were when you were 18 years old. I mean, that was my experience. Like, I had a kid when I was 18, and I didn't know shit about fuck. I had no business, like, being that girl's dad at that point. So when you think about that, like, even I was talking about it, like, at 24, I didn't know anything, like, being somebody at that age and trying to like provide a life and raise a child, like, it's a lot to ask anybody. Like, we don't know anything at that age.
I was 19 when I had Maya, and I thought I knew everything until I had her. And then I was like, well, fuck.
Mm-hmm. Where's the fucking manual to this thing?
Literally. I remember one time just being like, super high, and Maya was asleep in her crib, and I was just fucking sitting in my house staring at her crying, because I knew that I was not doing what I was supposed to do. I knew that I was not a good mom at that point, and just like worried that I was like gonna fuck this kid up worse than my mom ever dreamed of fucking me up.
You know, I have a certain motivation to keep me sober, and it's breaking like generational curses, right? Like, I come from a long line of alcoholics, drug addicts, yada 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 yada. Is that like a motivating factor for you while raising your children now? And do you have like any sort of fears that maybe your oldest daughter might have seen some things that she did see, and does that scare you in any which way? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. It's okay. Definitely a motivational factor. I don't stay in recovery every day because I think that I'm a great person and that I deserve it. But I know every day that my kids deserve it. Yep. My oldest and I have a really honest and open line of communication. She remembers some things. She wasn't impressed. One time I was just kidding. We were talking about like what Maya wanted to be when she grew up. And she said, I'm just going to live at home because this, you know, I'm never going to be able to afford to buy a house. And I was joking. And I guess, joke's on me, because I guess I forgot that like maybe a 12-year-old had never seen Breaking Bad. But I was like, you could just teach chemistry and also make meth. And she hit me with the sickest roast of all time. She was like, I'm not going to do that because I don't want to sell drugs to people and ruin their lives. And then they're going to have to go sit in those churches listening to those sad ass shares. I was like, damn, dude.
Dude.
Maya's been in meetings for like 5 years now.
She's been in meetings the whole time that I've been in meetings. She's been coming to meetings with me. She used to roll around in the middle of the floor on Wednesday night, remember? And they would always in the beginning be like, please be mindful of your children. And there would Maya be rolling around in the middle of the floor acting a fool.
Oh,
attacking dude. Blair.
Oh. I have a picture of Maya and Blair hanging up on my wall.
Yep, I got a picture of him right over there. Ooh, all right. So you sponsor people, which is fucking awesome. And I wanted to know what would you tell people that are looking for a sponsor, and also two parts, or people who are thinking about sponsoring people?
You know, it's not a marriage contract. I have had six sponsors in my go around. If it's not working, then I just get a new sponsor. If I like meet someone and I really like their ideas and like what they're about, and I feel like they could help me like level up, then I ask them to be my sponsor. I don't think that it's like, you don't have to like sign a blood oath or anything. You know, if you find someone you drive with, just fucking ask them. If it doesn't work out, just ask someone else. But I would say to people that are looking to sponsor, it's a fucking time commitment. And it's the most important commitment that I think we have in the 12-step recovery community. A lot of times a sponsor to a new person in the program is like the first really good peek into what recovery, what 12-step recovery can do for people. And it's a really serious responsibility. I think that it's also important to note that like a sponsor is simply someone that guides you through the 12 steps. I'm not telling you what to do at your doctor's appointment. I'm not telling you what kind of medication you need to be on. I think sponsorship is definitely the most integral part to 12-step recovery. Some of my very best friends are people that I sponsor. Shout out to Jeanette and Dragon, the homies, riders. Dragon's been with me for a long fucking time. It's my favorite form of service work. I'm not going to area service anymore. Fuck that. It's important. People should do it. I did it for a long time, so I can say fuck that. But people that haven't gone shouldn't say, It takes people that are really dedicated and knowledgeable about the traditions to not get upset. But I still want very much to be right all the time. So it's just not the venue for me.
You know what? I've had mixed. I've only had one sponsee this entire time, and it's not for lack of trying. I think it's because I'm like a small dude. I raise my hand and every single time, right? Like, hey, if you're looking to sponsor, I do this. Nobody ever comes up to me. I share and things like that, and I want another sponsee. But I guess they'll come when they come, right? My first one was unsuccessful, and it kind of hurts when they're unsuccessful. I was like, man, fuck this. I was like, I failed. I felt like it was like Star Wars, dude. Like, I felt like I was like, I failed you, Anakin. I have failed you, dude.
Yeah.
But he wasn't ready, you know?
Yeah, that's the worst part about sponsorship. That's the downside, is that, you know, not everyone sticks around. And sometimes people unfortunately pass away.
I've had a sponsee pass away. I feel shameful saying that too. Like, that's what's weird about it. You feel this responsibility, you know, but even though you can't, like, you can lead them to water and you can't make them drink, but it sucks.
Henry, remember when I used to run basically an unlicensed detox from my couch?
Yeah,
terrible times. None of this people stayed clean.
Yeah,
dude, can you guys elaborate on the guy who is named fucking Dragon? Who the fuck is Dragon, dude? I gotta know.
He's everything you would expect out of a person named Dragon.
Dragon is fucking legendary. If you think I don't give a fuck what people think about me, Dragon does not have a single fuck left to give about what people think about him. And he is like, just like such a fucking cool, nice fucking dude. Like, my kids love him. My youngest, Briar, she's obsessed with him. Even Maya thinks he's cool, and she's 12. So that's like clout, very high honor. He is just like fucking legendary, and all the bitches love Dragon. They all love Dragon. But like, he's
got like 8 face tats. He's got like 1.5 gauges. He's got, Kelly Clarkson, Nicki Minaj.
He has my name tattooed on him, bro. He has me and Kelsey's name tattooed on him because we're his best friends. He's a fucking rider.
Like,
on
his arm, it just says like Kelly Clarkson,
dude.
What's his tramp stamp?
Oh, you asked me too fast.
Yeah, I hope he Dragon's quite the character.
Yeah,
I hope he doesn't hear this and know that I forgot what his tramp stamp says.
Well, we'll make sure to send it to Dragon first, right when it drops.
But he's like one of the reasons that I'm still here. He's a good fucking person. He's been my sponsee for a long time. He feels like a member of the family at this point. He's just a really good dude. He's another one that has just like worked really hard to get everything that he has, and it's taken him a long time, but he just fucking does it.
Nice.
Yeah. And that's a controversial topic in the old rooms, is having sponsees or sponsors of the opposite sex.
It's actually wild, because I used to be like public enemy number one to sober living houses, and now If the dudes at the Ladder House are looking for a sponsor, like old Daddy Sean will fucking recommend me to them.
Nice. That's actually that is an indication that you've come a long way.
So far, I've come so far. They'll be like,
because they weren't sending them the old dicks are like crack Cassidy.
No, they'll be like, you're on a woman band, but you can still go places with Cassidy. And I'm just like, who decided that I could have this power? Yes. At one point I sponsored like half that fucking house.
Oh boy. Herding cats.
How'd you meet Henry?
I met Henry at meetings.
Meetings? Okay.
I believe Henry had a mullet when I met Henry.
Man bun.
Man bun. You're right. It was a man bun.
Yes. Man bun.
Who had the mullet? Dawson.
Oh yeah, Dawson.
I met Henry and I was like, I don't know this guy, but he's funny, so.
Yeah.
Cassidy had a certain gravity, and I was like, I want that girl to think I'm cool. That'll be my goal, because she had a certain gravity around the meetings.
I wouldn't say that. I'm just the loudest person there.
You're a Morgantown fixture.
Take the compliment. Take it. I'm bad at it. When people give me compliments, my wife will be like, "You're looking good today." Be like, "I'm an ugly piece of shit. Leave me alone. Go walk away."
People compliment me.
Schmeagle, leave me alone, dude. Nah. Like I just can't have it. I just can't have it. But that's funny. So Man Bun Henry, he is funny. So I get why you guys were gravitating towards each other. He is hilarious. I think he's quite funny.
Has Cam heard your Jacob's Ladder song?
I don't know. Have you seen that video?
I don't think
I have. Oh, God. Now we got to put the link in the fucking notes.
Put it in the notes.
Thanks, guys. That's why I did that.
God damn
it.
Dude, I'm
stuck. That's a project up there that everybody does with Brandy, the music guy, makes a song. And there are some... you could get lost in that rabbit hole, and your ears will bleed, and you will laugh your ass off. But it's a good time.
I love it, dude.
As long as everyone has fun, that's all I care about.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people don't want to do it at all, and probably shouldn't. But here we are. Tell us about Project Rainbow.
I was hoping you would ask.
Of course.
This is my baby.
Pump your shit, dog.
So, as I talked about earlier, I've worked in housing services for a really long time and in harm reduction. And while I was working for the harm reduction program, I was working with a trans woman who was unsheltered. And because of her gender identity, she was treated very poorly, like the victim of like verbal, physical assault, just a lot of complex trauma, rejected by her family, and that's what led to her being unsheltered because of her gender identity. She comes from a more rural area of West Virginia. And because of that, myself and two of my friends were sitting in my office one day, really fucking upset, wondering like what we could do for this woman, and also wondering like how many people like her are out there living the same conditions with nowhere safe to go. Cause like she couldn't go to the shelter. She was getting treated like shit at the traditional emergency shelter. So we were like, fuck it. Let's make a place. None of us had ever done this before. We had no fucking idea what we were doing. I didn't even know how one acquired a 501c3, but I know now. And we started working on this project in October of 2022. And this past summer, we started taking clients into the Rainbow House, which is West Virginia's first LGBTQ+ emergency shelter. And it's been really fucking amazing. That's another reason why they dox me online, because I love the LGBTQ community and our local community Facebook group does not fucking like that about me.
Yeah, we definitely have some people around here with some olden style backwards type of views.
We have people here that believe that there are fucking litter boxes in West Virginia schools for children that identify as cats. Okay, like we're at the bottom of the barrel.
I heard that. I've heard that before. Is that not a thing?
Absolutely fucking not. What middle and high school kids do you know that don't have a phone that wouldn't post a litter box in their school to fucking TikTok?
That's a really good point, actually, to be honest great with point. You. That is a great point. Now, have you seen a positive influx coming from Rainbow House? Are you guys staying busy over there?
Where is it? Is it right here in Morgantown?
It's in Montgomery County. Our location remains undisclosed, so that
makes the, sense. Yep.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Of course.
Do you get people? I mean, how's that going? Do you get people from further out because it's one of the only places like it?
Yeah, we take applications from all over the state. Right now we're running at about half capacity. We are completely volunteer based. Up until today, we had not been awarded grant funding. We did get awarded our first fucking grant funding today, which has been really fucking awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. But we were like completely community donations based, and we were able to fucking rent and renovate a space, get the items that we needed, and start taking people with our volunteer force. And it's been amazing. It's one thing for people to tell you like, hey, we think this is a cool thing that you're doing. And it's another for them to be like, hey, I'm going to throw $200 on that. Good, you know, get her done. And we have received a lot of financial contributions. It's wild.
I think there's something incredibly fucking sad about this statement when Henry asks, hey, yeah, where are you located? Oh, I can't tell you because people will come and try to violently attack the place. Like how fucking sad is that? Like, I'm sorry. I find that absolutely despicable. Like we can all have different views on things, but in my opinion, everybody should be treated equally if they need treatment in housing. It shouldn't have anything to do with their sexual orientation or how they identify, and they shouldn't have to hide in an addressless place out of fear, right? Like, I'm sorry, that just pisses me the fuck off, and I had to say something about it. Like, am I the only one that shares this rage on this podcast right now? Because I find that fucking ridiculous.
Been raging for years. I actually, one of my coworkers, told me about a client in their area who is a trans woman, and she is only allowed to access the shelter in her area if she wears men's clothes and portrays a gender identity that doesn't suit her. And instances like that are fucking disgusting, but that's why we made what we made.
Yeah, and I just want to say how cool it is. So everyone who's listened to this podcast has heard that you were a drug addict, homeless, selling booty, so on and so forth. And for you to not only be a contributing member of society and have a job, but figure out how to have your own company and have an idea, turn it into something and create that, like, ooh, I'm feeling the warm and fuzzies. Like, that's a success story. And that's why, like, that's why I try to tell people and explain to people, like, especially, I know this grinds your fucking gears, people who hate on naloxone. Like, you don't know what my fucking friends are achieving that are alive because of that. You know, like, you don't know what my fucking friends are. We know doctors, lawyers, like people like you who are housing, you know, like all this shit. We're saving lives and doing so much. And like, if a lot of these people wouldn't be here if it wasn't for naloxone, but I digress, but I want to give you your flowers because that kind of stuff fires me up so much to see my friends that I know were in the fucking deep, deep struggles doing cool shit. Like, it's just incredible.
Yeah, I appreciate that a lot. I like to let people make an ass of themselves when they come at me with their opinions about naloxone. I'll let them get in real deep and just like double down on the ignorant shit they're saying before I hit them with the, I've been revived four times.
I don't quite understand why there's an issue with that. Like, what's the base argument? What's the number one argument against it?
They're worthless. I'm just curious. Dopers, let them die.
Why is naloxone free, but not my insulin? Like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Because because other sick people's suffering, God, how do they say that? Like they should have to suffer the way I have to suffer. Like, hey, by the way, we don't think that your insulin should cost fucking $11 billion either. That's also bullshit. But we're all, you know, it's just a different kind of suffering that we also don't approve of.
Yeah, yeah. It's the biggest high crime in the country, dude. My dad's a fucking type 2 diabetic. You should see how expensive that shit is. It's ridiculous, bro.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just curious as to what those arguments are, because I mean, our guest Shandell was saved by shit like that. You know what I mean? He wouldn't even be fucking alive if it wasn't for that shit.
A lot of people.
Countless people.
It's like, it's this weird thing where like people pit one group against the other. And we're seeing a lot actually with Project Rainbow. A lot of ignorant people are like commenting shit like, well, why are you doing this for gay people but not for veterans, which is like truly rooted in ignorance, because veterans do have specialized housing programs and all kinds of fucking resources that they can access. It's just the whole idea of like one group being less deserving than another group just really irks me.
I know you're a Star Wars fan. Are you also, I feel like you're a Harry Potter fan.
I love Harry Potter. I'm not particularly pleased with J.K. Rowling and her ideals, but Harry Potter rolled me through some tough times growing up.
Well, that's actually what I was getting at, because I just stumbled. I'm not on Twitter, and I don't really like watch news or pay attention, and I stumbled on the whole J.K. Rowling issue, and I listened to like a big investigative journalism piece about it. But I was curious, like, cause I want to know, like, what about what she said is like so harmful, and why does it put trans people in danger and stuff like that? Cause I'm trying to better understand.
So it's not like she is like calling for the mass extinction of trans people, but this is like already like a super marginalized community. And when you have someone with a following or a platform speaking negatively about super marginalized people, I mean, we're seeing it right now. Like Nicki Minaj's fan base is just out here doing the most to like people that are saying that Nicki Minaj is acting a fool, doxing them online, sending them threats, wanting to show up. So like when you're doing that to a marginalized group of people, you might not be calling openly for violence towards them. But it's like you're dehumanizing them in a sense to the people that follow you.
Or I guess what you're saying is you're not necessarily calling for violence, but people in the extreme could take it as their sign or signal to, well, she means this by that, and so fuck them.
Yeah, and just the way that life is for like trans people and gay people and gender nonconforming people as it is, anyone with a platform speaking negatively about them, it just like opens them up to a world of hate. And that could either be like violence or someone like calling them slurs on the street and just all kinds of true ignorance. The suicide rates among trans people are really fucking high.
Yeah.
Now, I guess it's because it's such a hot button issue, right? And I still think that society just doesn't know how to properly accept that community yet. I don't know why that is, but I have a feeling. Well, I guess I could say that there are certain aspects of the transgender movement that I do disagree with. I will be honest, I had a doctor's appointment for my four-year-old daughter, and I had to sign a waiver saying that when she's 12 years old, the doctors don't have to report that if she wants to change her gender. I'm not privy to that information. Now I should be privy to that information, right? Would we agree? Like every sane human being would think that I should know. Like I wouldn't necessarily try to stop my daughter from doing that, but I should at least know that that's going on. That's a very serious thing, because when I was 12 years old, all I was thinking about was skateboarding and jacking off to, you know, Jennifer Love Hewitt pictures on a Maxim magazine. So we shouldn't be making life altering decisions that are going to change everything on because a 12-year-old decided that maybe they want to change their gender. I'm all for it, but I think we should wait till they're a little bit older at least. And that may be off base, and I don't mean to offend, but that's just how I feel.
I think ultimately it just depends on the parents, right? Like, I have like super open and honest conversations with my older kid about anything she wants to talk to me about. And my hope is that if she did want to make a decision like, you know, transitioning, or she, you know, wanted to talk, maybe she grows up and decides that, or doesn't decide, or whatever. I don't know how to say what I'm trying to say, but whatever she finds out about her gender identity or sexuality, my hope is that I have like opened that line of communication for her to be honest with me about that. Not every child has that. And I think that's why certain places have statutes like that in place. Not necessarily to take autonomy away from parents, but to give autonomy to children who or young adults whose parents don't accept them for who they are. So I don't necessarily think it's like a punitive measure for the parents. And as long as you are having like open and honest lines of communication with your children, like they'll fucking talk to you, you know? Just because you signed a paper that said that the doctor won't necessarily divulge your child's medical information doesn't mean that your kid wouldn't want you to be involved in that decision.
Yeah, and there is some truth to that. Like you said, I value that as well. Like open conversation. Me, Hen, and I have talked about this on this podcast. You know, as it in terms of, you know, drug and alcohol use. You know, hey, we're open books with our kids. When my time comes, my kids are too young, I'll be completely open with them. And if one of my kids comes and says that they're attracted to the same sex, I have absolutely no problem with it. And I share the same dreams that you have, that I hope that they feel comfortable enough to come and talk to me about it. But I just think that, I don't know. It just seems like that's a little too young to be making those decisions. I see your point that those kids might not feel safe enough to say that to their parents. And I have seen alarming things like we've talked about that. Most of these homeless people actually are like teenagers running away, and they are the trans teenagers, and the suicide rate is huge. So there is an issue. I just don't know how we solve it. And that's my concern.
Yeah, it is. I think that we as a society have a lot to like learn and also unlearn. I also think that if like 90% of old people would just like move to Florida and start their own country, we would be in a better spot. But you know,
if Joe Biden would go to a nursing home,
all of them, I can't deal with any of them. Like if you can like in intimate detail tell me about what the 1950s were like, I need you to go. Or the 1960s.
If you were getting milkshakes in a Bel Air.
Like I need this to stop happening. If you, I just can't. I just hear my kids running around upstairs, and I'm just like, what?
Well, we just like we talked a little bit about the podcast that I listened to last week, and one of my takeaways is just like we should be able to have these conversations, and like I want to understand better, and I think that's the problem. Is in both sides, and this is like the exact same with politics, is everyone thinks everyone's way over here and way over here, but there's so many more people in the middle, but like they'll have you believe that everyone's way over here and way over here. And like what, you know, some of the things that J.K. Rowling experienced with like death threats and people telling that they hope she gags on her dick and all this, like I thought about that, and I'm like, how are we fighting violence against some marginalized people with threats of violence towards this person? But, you know, as you were talking, I thought about that argument, like where that's maybe just a small percentage, and maybe the people have to be so loud because a lot of the other people, you know, aren't able to speak for themselves.
Well, I also don't believe that, like, I just don't believe that anyone is receptive to death threats. I have worked with some, like professionally through my job, have worked with some of the most transphobic, homophobic, racist people I've ever met in my fucking life, who I hated. But I still had to work with them, so I had to make the best of it. And I found that, like, through compassion and, like, just, like, treating them like human beings and, like, teaching them why I don't hold those same values, I have been able to, like, educate more people that way than by telling them that they're a fucking piece of shit. And there, I mean, there are some times when telling someone they're a piece of shit is warranted. There are some times when it's a lost cause, but I'm not going to waste my energy on telling a lost cause to go choke on a dick. It's just not my style.
Well, I think that's the point that Henry was trying to make, right? Like, you just proved it. Like, hey, having the conversation could maybe sway some people's opinions of it, right? Like, people can come in with an idea, and then if you actually sit down and have a conversation, hey, well, lo and behold, you know, I thought one thing, but now, you know what, that's not that big of a deal. I thought it was way worse because I made it all in my head, or what Twitter told us. And I think social media just has a lot to do with this, and we're in a transformation period. And I agree. Yeah. Any of these politicians, that's the greatest statement I've ever heard. If you could tell me about the 1950s, you gotta go take a nap, dude. We're done with you running the country.
I'm over it. I have, like Henry knows, I have a very big vendetta against old people. I'm anti old people.
Oh, I love old people. I love old people. I just don't want them in the fucking White House.
Yeah, running the country and making millions off of stock tips when it's illegal for us fucking poor people to do it.
I've had 67 facelifts. Get the fuck out of here, Nancy Pelosi.
I just wish that someone regular, some regular, degular guy or gal would be the fucking president of the United States. Like, if you don't fucking know what it's like to, like, have to hit up your homie and buy their food stamps for fucking 50 cents on the dollar because
you've never worked in the service industry, you cannot be president.
Well, good thing you're looking at the 2028 election candidates. It's going to be either Sheridan and Davis 2028 or Davis and Sheridan. We haven't decided, but yeah, we're going to run. We'll be the next presidential candidate.
You can be big dog. I don't even want that job, dude.
You're coming with. I'm sending you to North Korea on fucking diplomatic fucking jobs, bro.
Shaking hands, kissing babies.
You're the man for it, dude. We'll get you a man bun and everything.
Bring back the man bun, Henry.
I don't think the Beyonce would be down with that.
Well, now it's time for our last two questions, Cassidy. What is your favorite part of recovery? It can be short and sweet.
My favorite part of recovery is being a mom, being the mom that I always wanted to have.
That's a great fucking answer. That's a great answer.
Love that. Breaking generational curses. And the next question is, what would you tell someone who's struggling right now?
I would tell them I love you. There's support for you. And just don't fucking give up.
I love it.
Absolutely.
Those are right to the point. Right to the point.
Simple.
Yeah.
Simple and effective. All right. Well, we're going to put the links for Project Rainbow in the show notes. If people want to donate or help out in any kind of way, we'll put that in there because that's an awesome cause we're supporting. I really appreciate you coming on. And it's interesting, when I have guests like you, I see where, you know, we talk about standing on the shoulders of giants. A lot of the stuff that you talked about, I'm like, oh, that's where I got that from. I appreciate everybody who's been a part of my journey, and you've definitely been a huge part. So it's been awesome to have you, and thanks for coming on and having a conversation with
thanks
us.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Yeah, and it was really nice meeting you. I heard a lot of great things about you, and you lived up to the entire hype. and I hope you don't see me as a transphobe or anything like that. I was just asking genuine questions. You keep fighting the good fight. I'm super proud of you from all the way out here in California. You're doing a great job. Keep breaking those generational curses, and maybe we'll have you back one of these days. Because you were a great guest, Cassidy. So thank you again for coming on, and I look forward to hearing this episode back. I think our fans are going to really like it.
Thank you. I hope to come back soon.
Right. Well, hey.
All right. Later, Cass.
Later. Later.
She was great, dude. She was great. I liked how fucking calm she was. She's just so calm. But then all of a sudden, you know, she just sit there and then she bust out these F-bombs. Like, I love how she just casually is like, yeah, I was just like, you know, selling myself on the street. Or, oh, hey, yeah, I was just randomly sexually assaulted. Like just NBD, dog.
Dude, she's calm. Like, I feel like we talk about this where we've been through so much. You know, she's been through so much that everything's like, you know, it's not that big of a deal. But she will bust a motherfucker's head figuratively over, like, the stuff that she believes in, which I love. Like, she has her convictions, and like, you're not going to shame people around her. You're not going to treat people, you know, drive the newcomer out of the meeting. You're not going to shame people on MAT or because of their gender or race or whatever else. And she like believes in that shit, you know? And if you're good, it's cool. It's all good. And if you're an asshole, like, she's going to tell you what's up. And she's just real and honest. And she's always been honest. You know, that part about getting her kid back and how fucking hard she was. I was in the rooms when she was like, dude, I don't know what I'm doing. I haven't been a mom for years. This kid's fucking crazy and blah, blah. And stuff like that was so inspiring to me, and everyone knew in recovery, right? Because like she said, trophy sharing, like me going in a meeting and be like, yeah, I got this sick ass truck and this sick ass job and this and that and this, and like, people can't relate to that. They're like, fuck, when do I get that? I need that now. But people being like, man, this shit's hard as fuck, dude, and I don't know what to do and I'm having a hard time. It's like, oh, okay, she has 4 years and she's saying that, so it's okay for me with my 3 months to still be struggling, because I thought I was going to be better. But if she has 3 years and she's still having a tough time, I feel a little better about myself.
Yeah, dude. And that's the beauty of having those fucking those rigorously honest people like her, right? And I actually admire the shit out of her for you know, like you just said, standing up for what the fuck she believes in, right? Regardless of what it is, right? And it's like, hey, this is what it is, and I'm gonna die on these hills. And they're all honorable causes, right? Like, it's not like it's like, hey, I'm gonna die on the hill of fucking, you know, kicking old people, even though she probably would, because she said she doesn't like old people. But you get what the fuck I'm saying, right? Like, she's fighting the good fight and hopefully changing some minds of some people in the world like we truly need. So I think that she was a great guest. It was really cool to sit and chat with her, and I think it's cool that you guys got to you know, sit down and she's on the fucking pod. She said our pod's better than some guy who has a podcast. So there, we got our compliment for the day. How's that?
Well, you know, the other thing that she said that I thought was so important is some of those people that she's met that are so racist or, you know, whatever, like having a conversation with those people, because, you know, the way we talk about finding grace for our parents or people who've wronged us, not that I'm over here promoting grace for racist people, but I learned when I came to West Virginia, and I don't want this to sound like a condemnation of people or all the people, but it's just something that I learned, that there are people who were born in a town and there's no black people in that town, and they've never been 15 miles outside of that town, and it's all they ever know, and all they knew was what their daddy told them and what his daddy told them. And it really made me understand and think about, and this is exactly what she was talking about, if you just have a conversation and be like, hey, well, did you know I know somebody and he's really cool. I know somebody that's blank and he's a really good guy and this is what he does and he whatever, whatever. And it also made me think Randall Brown and then another guy, Brandy, couple of brothers that work up at Jacob's Ladder, they have had many clients come through with literal swastikas tattooed on their neck or face, like,
yeah.
And Brandy loves having conversations with those people, and so does Randall. And like she said, some of them, you might change their mind. They might leave there crying and be like, damn, that's crazy, I never thought of that. And some people won't. But just to have those conversations, and I want to thank her again when she listens, to just entertain that conversation with us, because neither side is going to understand each other if they won't have a conversation and listen. Like, I know more now than I did 10 minutes ago about the subject, and we're all fed. We're fed confirmation bias. You know, you start to like one thing or feel one way, you're only going to be fed that information that confirms what you already think. So if you're just doing that and you're never hearing anybody from the other side, you're never going to get that other argument where, you know, a couple of things she said, I'm like, oh, okay, that makes perfect sense. I never thought of that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, man. By the way, that was a good little rant, dude. You're spitting flames there. Look at you. Did you have a C4 before you got on here today?
Pre-workout before the gym.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You're operating at peak performance, dude. But yeah, no. That is the point of it, right? And hopefully for our listeners and our viewers, you could see how, hey, look, there was a conversation that, you know, was fantastic, and we actually talked about something that is a hot button issue. And ready, nobody was screaming at anybody, nobody was arguing with anybody, nobody was doing anything. We were sharing questions back and forth and receiving and giving information, and lo and behold, ready, we had a nice wonderful send off and everything was fine. So it can be done. The problem is, you fucking crazy reactive assholes out there don't want to do it. And that's about it, man. That's about it. But I got kids crying out here. Is there anything else you want to say before I give them the spiel,
Hen? Nah, man. Hit them over the head, right. Shrimp man.
All right. Blah, blah, blah. Give us a follow up.
Is that your shrimp noise?
That's shrimp it, dude.
Here's mine. Can you hear the claws?
Dude, the big old claws. You gotta snap. They gotta have like a big ass snap or something, dude. Dude, you gotta get like those, like, all right, something like that, dude. Blah, 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 blah. All right, dude. Shrimp man speaking. So
you will never get this. La 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 la.
La 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 la. Follow us on everything. Spotify. We will have it on Apple. Jesus. Yeah, you RuTube, Rude Dude Pod.
Fuck you, everywhere. RSS.
Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. We will have video dropping with the audio every Monday moving forward. So be excited about that. We do have merch. We are going to get updated merch eventually to our new logo. Probably make some new shirts, maybe a couple sweatshirts. Those are going to be dope. You're going to want to get those. If you would like to support this podcast with a small monthly donation, there is a support this podcast button down at the bottom of the show description. We will also have linked Project Rainbow. If you know anybody in the LGBTQA+ community who is in need of shelter or assistance out there in the West Virginia area,
would like to donate,
or if you would like to donate, please click the link and support a good cause. With that being said, I think next week, is it just you and I again, Hen, or do we have somebody else?
I don't think we have a planned guest.
I don't think we do. So I think you're going to get another back to back with us, and I think we got a good one.
We do.
We got a heater, dude. We got a heater. Yeah, so you're going to want to come back.
Maybe we'll build off what she talked about with parenting and stuff.
I think it's a perfect fucking segue, dude. So yeah, you guys are in store for a real good one. So I will finish it like I always do. I love you, Hen.
I love you too, Cam. And remember, if you think naloxone is stupid, look at my friend Cassidy and all she's doing for the world. And be yourself and fuck what they think.
And Michael made it to North Carolina safely. Later, Ed.
Later.
When an MC with the music and miracle, I'm an upbeat and boy, the lyrical's so right. Oh,